Welcome back to Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, we're going to talk a little TV. Wally Podrajic's here. He's already here. Love it. He's in the green room watching TV. The man who is one of the co-authors of the Watching TV. It's essentially a textbook. It's a guidebook to everything you need to know about any television shows in this book. But he's also turned it into an exhibit at the Museum of Broadcast Communications called Watching TV in the 90s, where essentially he wrote this exhibit, and it's on display now. That's really about how television in the 90s is the last time it was the glory, that the idea that everybody in the country was watching one thing, whether it be the O.J. Simpson trial or the season finale of Friends or Seinfeld or something like that. It's changed the way we watch TV, the numbers of people that are watching TV at any given moment. You know, obviously the advent of DVR and things like that have changed the way we do things. So Wally argues that this was the gold moment television in the 90s, and it's on display at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. So we'll talk with Wally coming up. And also in the 10 o'clock hour, it's the worst. Time for the worst, 312-981-7200. This is where we complain about all the things in our society for prizes. Can't go wrong. Adam Burke's going to be here, great Chicago comedian and producer here at WGN, Kristen Decker. All right. Well, my guest tonight at the big table is the alderman of the 10th Ward. This is her first term. Susan Sidlowski Garza has a great Chicago pedigree. The daughter of iconic labor leader Ed Sidlowski and a public school counselor with ties to the Chicago Teachers Union, she's quickly risen the ranks as one of the voices for the new progressive political movement here in Chicago politics. She was the subject of a Chicago Reader article earlier this month that pointed out that she's not given unpaid leave from her job at CPS when she serves as alderman. Now, before you question that, know that the mayor does grant unpaid leave to firefighters, police officers, and other city workers. And surprisingly, this is very surprising, Sidlowski Garza is the first CPS counselor, teacher, whatever you want to say, to serve in the council. So this really hasn't come up before. So why not teachers? Why not Sidlowski Garza? Well, that's what we're going to try to figure out. In studio with me tonight, former school counselor and current 10th Ward Alderman, Susan Sidlowski Garza. Thanks for being here.
Hey, Justin. Thanks so much for having me.
So that article, that was Ben Jarofsky's article in The Reader. Did that make you uncomfortable that he was talking so much about your unpaid leave or lack of?
I didn't find it uncomfortable at all. I was actually kind of glad that he brought it to people's attention. I've been getting a lot of people coming up to me and saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe that you're not getting a paid leave. I'm on leave. So I think it was a lot of people were unaware that I wasn't granted a leave. I'm still not granted the leave.
Now, in the article, and it's mentioned that, you know, there is no precedent for this, and the mayor has always given it. And CPS and the city are separate entities.
Correct.
So the mayor does give police, firefighter, and city workers that leave. But... Mm-hmm. But this could be changed. I mean, this could be what's standing in the way of this not for you not getting the leave.
Well, you know, my theory behind this is that because I'm the first CTU member, I was area vice president for the Chicago Teachers Union. I sat on the steering committee for the union, and I believe that nobody wants to give me the leave because they don't want people to. Regular average citizens like me in CTU especially to run for office. I have 21 years with the Board of Ed. Mm-hmm. And if somebody behind me has 10 years and they run and they win, they're going to have to give up their pension. So that might be a deterrent for some people to run,
interesting, right?
So we need to set a precedent that says, hey, you can keep your pension, you can run, we'll guarantee your spot if you come back, and you're
so
safe.
At your 21-year tenure, you're okay with pension. You're not losing the pension by getting an unpaid leave from your job to go to Alderman.
No, and they have to hold your spot. If you're on unpaid leave, CPS has to hold your spot so you can come back to your job if, you know, you choose not to run again for office or if you lose the election, you can go back to your spot at CPS. Well, if you're 26 or 27 years old, you need something to go back to in case being an alderman doesn't, you know, you don't last 40 years, you know, so.
Now, the mayor will say this is before his time. This is something that's been on the books
Correct.
For a while. And but it is, I mean, regardless of who's mayor, you really do look at it as another one of these tricks in Chicago politics to keep regular people out and to continue to give you know, the sort of quote unquote Chicago machine more opportunity to be the politicians that run our city.
Well, you know, teaching is a predominantly female dominated profession too. So, you know, I think that one of the reasons, if this was a predominantly male profession, mm-hmm. I don't think this would be the same decision. When I spoke to the head of the law department with CPS last April, right after I won, he told me, he said, we don't have a precedent. There's no precedent set here. We don't know, like, basically they didn't know what to do. And I said, the virgin's been sacrificed, grant me the leave, right? And we're still waiting. And it's actually become part of the negotiations with the contract, so.
And that's pointed out as well, that maybe this one case probably shouldn't be a part of the collective bargaining or the negotiation.
It shouldn't be. Absolutely not. I'm serving the city. I'm serving the constituents of my ward. I think the same precedent that firemen, police, streets and sand workers, county workers, they all get a leave of absence. And it's unpaid. I mean, rightfully so. Why am I different?
The last question on this, do you think this is politically motivated, and more so, do you think it has to do with the way that the city and the way that politicians have viewed teachers over time?
Absolutely. I do. Absolutely. You know, with each passing year, teachers become more and more of the bad guy. You know, when the hell did that happen? You know, everybody that does a job in the city is there because of a teacher. Everybody learned to read and write because of a teacher. When did society start putting teachers way down here when, you know, every other country looks at teachers like doctors and brain surgeons? So why do we not do that in the United States? I don't get it, because it's not just in Chicago. It's everywhere you look. So, yeah, I do think it's politically motivated, and I think it's because it's a female-dominated profession. I really do.
Susan Sadlowski-Garza is in studio with me. She's a 10th Ward Alderman. Let's take a quick break. We'll come back, and I'd love to get your take on some of the things that are happening. Obviously, CPS is at the forefront today. You know, here comes the pension payment. They're going to pay the payment. Also, we've seen in Springfield so much talk about the B word, bailout, and whether or not giving Chicago public schools is more money. We'll talk with the alderman here about those issues when we come back. Stay with us. Tenth Ward Alderman Susan Sadlowski-Garza in studio with me at the big table tonight on the download. All right, so let's talk about CPS. You were a counselor. You were
21 years at Jane Addams Elementary, same school that I went to as a kid.
Really?
My kids went to, and I worked there for 21 years. So I was actually inside the walls of Jane Addams for 46 years as a student, a parent, and as an employee.
How do you like? Do you like that? I mean, is it something that
I'm really proud of that? You know, it's a true neighborhood school, and I mean, the school had my heart. It still does. I mean, I grew up there. I played on the playground when I was a kid. I watched the place evolve from one school to a school with a demountable, to a school with an annex, a demountable, and renting space in a Catholic church.
Well, you'd be a perfect person to ask the question about, as we've seen CPS ebb and flow over the years and evolve. Mm-hmm. Where are we? I mean, when you think about it through the lens of being a counselor, let's start there, at a neighborhood school.
Okay.
Has it gotten better or worse in the 46 years that you are part of it?
And there is no doubt in my mind, and I can say this with 100% certainty, it's gotten worse. I was one counselor with 894 students. Because of budget cuts, I had to do lunchroom duty, recess duty, teach classes.
Really?
Now, I am not a certified teacher. My undergrad is in psychology. My master's is in counseling. I can teach. I can hold a captive audience, and I can teach sex ed with the best of them, right? But because of budget cuts, I was forced to do all these other things. And I didn't become so much of a counselor as I was more of like I had to fill in for all these people that were taken away.
Right.
And that's wrong, because the kids that need the help the most aren't getting it anymore. They're not.
So now, with your vantage point in city council and being the representative of the 10th Ward as an alderman there, talk about the problems that we see. I mean, obviously, today's news that CPS is going to pay their pension payment, $690+ million. They have essentially 20 some odd million in the bank, which is, for me, that'd be like $53. You know, it's not a good situation.
No.
But from a lawmaker standpoint, mm-hmm. where do you think we are with CPS when it comes to funding, when it comes to health? I mean, are we at a doomsday scenario?
Well, when it comes to health, look, CPS is sick, right? I mean, absolutely. And I'm very appalled at the fact that the governor keeps calling this a bailout. It's not a bailout. We can't call giving money to the biggest school district in the state a bailout. These kids deserve better. These kids deserve funding so that they can have education just like everybody else in these suburbs. Why do black and brown neighborhoods get funded less than affluent white ones? That's wrong. Every kid should have the same exact amount of funding. I don't care where you live. That's
now,
first and foremost.
You know, Republican lawmakers, we've had them on the show, the state lawmakers, senators in the House as well, talk about that, you know, this is mismanagement, that CPS has done a poor job of managing its funds, and you can't just keep coming back to the piggy bank when, you know, you've continually kicked the can down the road and done poor practices, economic practices. That's how we got here, and we're not going to continue to do that. What's your take on that?
You know, here's the thing, Justin. You're absolutely right. CPS mismanaged the money, not the people in the trenches. That's number one. 21 years, I made my pension payment every single month. In 1996, I think CPS was like $96 million in the black, and Mayor Daley decided not to make a pension payment and started borrowing until it got to be so much that now we're in this financial mess that we have no one knows how to get out of. People have to step up and do their job. I mean, we are, what, 385 days without a budget? I feel like we're being held hostage, and the kids are the ones that are going to lose at this. We as lawmakers have to step up. We have to do something so that these doors open in the fall, that there's not layoffs, there's not bigger class sizes, kids are getting wraparound services, there's nothing left to cut. I have schools in my ward that have 41 kids in a classroom, 39 kindergartners in a mobile with one teacher, no aid, and one teacher with 39 kids. And that teacher is being held responsible for those kids coming out of that classroom. They got to have NWA scores, and they got to read, right. And they got to do. How, really?
I mean, you're well equipped to understand this issue because you've been in the classroom.
Right.
I mean, we've talked about, you're the first CTU member mm-hmm. to be in city council. That's pretty amazing to think about.
I'm very proud of that.
But when you think about the issues of 41 kids to one teacher, or like some of the other issues you mentioned about being one counselor or having to mm-hmm. fill in and do things, those are things that a lot of lawmakers just can't understand, especially when the rhetoric gets ratcheted up.
You're absolutely right. And we need to put all the rhetoric aside. And coming into city council for me was really eye-opening. And this is no disrespect to my colleagues, but not a lot of people, hardly any of the people, know what's actually going on inside the classrooms because they haven't been there. I don't know what goes on inside a firehouse because I'm not in there. So it's no fault of their own, but we can't keep making decisions on something that's so important as education when we don't know what's really happening. And CPS literally makes these cockamamie decisions with no idea how it's going to be implemented or how it's going to play out. And the kids are the one that suffer. I'll give you a perfect example. The year I left, last year, in January, the new regime comes in and pulls the whole math series in January. We're doing a new math series. It's coming in. We're doing a new one. Throw out what you're doing and let's do it. No
right,
books.
Right, right.
Nothing. And just tells people to implement this. There's new programs, new scenarios implemented every 6 months, every year, and there's no continuity. So, I mean, it's just, we need
new
educators.
New idea after new idea, right.
Yeah.
For you as a rank and file alderman, first term.
Yep.
One of the things that we've heard a lot here in the state of Illinois, in the city of Chicago, is just that the leaders are the ones that are, you know, either putting something forward or taking something back or assessing the vote. And we see this in the state house even tonight. You know, the idea that a lot of rank and file politicians or lawmakers will say, I've got an idea. Or, you know what, open it up to a debate so we can debate because I have some thoughts on this.
Mm-hmm.
As someone with background in schooling and yet you're a first term alderman, where we're not discussing. I don't know when's the last time we saw a robust debate in city council about the issues of CPS. It just doesn't happen.
Oh, about CPS. Well, you know, one of the things that...
Does it frustrate you that they're not saying, hey, Sue, come on in. We'd like to have you figure this out. And you were in the classroom. How can we bring this down? How can we pay? Instead, it's a game that's being played at the top with the leaders.
You know, one of the things, we have an education committee in city council, right? And I'm an educator. I'm an educator sitting in the city council, but yet it was given to somebody that is not an educator. Even if we make decisions in city council about CPS, it really holds no water because they're two separate entities, right?
Right.
So why even have an education committee? Can you say patronage, right? So that's one thing. There are some great ideas, and people that are in the trenches have some great ideas. What about a corporate head tax, right? Bring that back so the corporations can pay some money on the people that work there. That can generate like $96 million. What about looking at the TIF funds? What about looking at the TIFs that sunset this year? What
right.
about the TIF surplus? All that stuff goes back into the general fund, and we don't know where it is. Where is it? What do we use it on? I think that's a short-term solution. Long-term solution, we need to go to Springfield. We need to, you know, have a LaSalle Street tax. We need to start looking at other options that are going to be sustainable, right? But right now, we have to make sure that the door is open in August. September.
What can you do to make sure that that happens? I mean, as an alderman, I mean, you obviously, this game is playing out in Springfield. As you just mentioned, CPS yep. is a different entity. What can you do as a representative of the 10th Ward here in Chicago to make sure that the schools in your district are open and are funded in September?
We have to keep lobbying. And we need to start educating every single person that sits on the city council. We need to start calling our lawmakers in Springfield and make sure that they have the same education and that they know what's happening inside our schools. I find that there's a lot of people that are, like you said, they're out of touch on what's really happening. I mean, you have a kid in CPS, mm-hmm. so you're more in tune at what's happening. We have to just keep fighting. And as people that serve the constituents of my ward and the people that serve the constituents of this state, education has to be our number one priority. You know, that's what infuriates me. I mean, it's not a bailout. We're educating kids. It's not a bailout.
A lot of rhetoric around whether or not the schools start on time because of funding, but there's also a contract issue with Chicago Teachers mm-hmm. Union about whether or not we're going to see a contract come together between CPS and CTU. You are in a situation where you're a sitting alderman, but you're also a member of CTU.
Yep.
What do you, I mean, can you give us any insight to whether or not we could be seeing a strike in September?
Well, you know what? I know that they're negotiating, right? And I know that teachers aren't there to be millionaires. This isn't a money issue in any way, shape, or form. And I know that teachers have been bending over backwards trying to educate these kids with a shoestring budget. When I was in CPS, I spent more money out of my pocket than I can even tell you. And I know that everybody else does the same. It's not about money. It's about dignity. It's about respect. It's about looking at us and really believing in what we're doing and knowing that we're there because we love and want to educate these kids. It's our passion. Nobody goes into education to be a millionaire. No one. And I watch what's happening from the powers that be, what they're doing to teachers, and teachers are feeling degraded. They're being looked at as like they're the enemy. And again, that's wrong.
Can that be solved by just a different tenor in the negotiations, or is that actually you winning concessions from CPS and from the city?
Well, I think one of the thing is, you know, the whole evaluation system. Teachers are being belittled with, oh, you're unsatisfactory and you're not doing your job. And this is happening to teachers that have 20 years under their belt that are brilliant at what they do. And this is a tactic that principals can use to get rid of higher paid teachers, because now we have this per pupil budgeting.
Right.
And we used to get for every 30 kids, you would get one teacher. Well, now it's you get, I think it's like $5,400 a year per kid. So it's like the Hunger Games. And I watched that even as a counselor when they started this. Principals will take anybody, Indiana, you know, South Dakota. I don't care where you're from. They start scooping up kids. They'll start taking kids from other schools because that makes their budget bigger. But on the other flip side of the coin, they don't want a teacher that makes 80 grand a
right.
year.
They want to be able to have entry level.
Yeah, or the second year teacher is the golden ticket because she's got 1 year under her belt and she's, you know, she's not fresh out of college. So she's a little experienced but doesn't cost so much. But, you know, there's something to be said for those teachers that are they're brilliant. CPS asked us to go back to school and get educated. So we went back. We got our master's. We got a lane increase. Go back. People got their national board certification. You get a stipend. You do this. You do that. We did everything they asked, and now they're penalizing us for that.
Susan Sadlowski-Garza is in studio with me. She's a 10th Ward alderman. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back with more of the conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. It's The Download here on WGN Radio. I'm Justin Kaufman. Beautiful night here in Chicago. In studio with me, Alderman Susan Sadlowski-Garza. She is the alderman of the 10th Ward on the southeast side of Chicago. This is her first term. We're talking about the issues that are facing the city right now, everything from schools to budgets to taxes. As we know here in Chicago, in the next couple weeks, we're going to be getting our tax bills, and it will have it will reflect some of the changes that were voted upon last year for new taxes here in the city of Chicago, especially when it comes to property taxes. You voted against it.
I did.
Why?
Yes. I voted against it because during the election, while I was campaigning, I ran on the premise of I would not raise property taxes. And, I'm not going to burden the working class people of my ward with yet another bill. My ward is actually was a mill town, a true mill town. We had 9 steel mills. Southworks had 22,000 guys at its peak. And when those mills left, so did the jobs, so did the restaurants, so did the businesses. Everything around it was gone. And people in my ward, literally, there's families that don't even have enough money to buy a loaf of bread or a gallon of milk. And to raise your property taxes, which I was lobbied pretty hard for a yes vote, it was a lot of pressure because
in those situations, I mean, who lobbies you? The mayor's office, other aldermen, who comes to say
every
Sue,
single
we need your
person
vote?
You can imagine, every single person you can imagine, the mayor's people. He got me where it hurts. He, you know, started having labor unions call me. So it was brutal. It really was because it weighed heavy on my mind. But I promised the constituents of my ward that I would not raise property taxes. And 6 months into the job, I could not go back on my word because, you know, here's the thing for me. All I got in this is my word. That's all I have. And if I tell people something and go back on that, my integrity is gone. And that means more to me than anything.
And as a politician, and you, as you know, but I mean, you're going to have to face that at some point or another. There will be things that you voted one way and then voted the other. We're seeing it on the long history of Secretary Hillary Clinton, where they're just, you know, there's a lot of votes and a lot of things, and people are always looking for that moment. Are you prepared for that moment as a new politician where you promised one thing and you had to go a different way?
I haven't been faced with that yet. I've taken some really tough votes, but I one of the things that I've realized is that people on the outside don't really see and hear the total picture of what you're voting on. There's so many little separate entities that, you know, play into it, and the media spins it where she voted yes, she voted no, but they don't really tell you every little intricate detail of what you're voting on. So, you know, for that, I haven't been faced with that yet. I'm ready. I can't foresee the future.
Right.
I might vote on something today that down the road will come back to bite me, but I always vote my conscience. I always vote with the people of the 10th Ward in mind. And as long as I stay true to my values and my morals, I'll be all right.
All right. So let's talk about that property tax vote because it did pass.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll ask you just as a contrarian, I mean, okay, so what are some counter proposals? What would you rather see the city do than raise the property tax to be able to fill a pretty substantial budget hole?
I agreed. So one of the things that was told to me before this vote was that anybody that had homes under the $250,000 range were not going to be touched. That's not going to affect them, right? Well, that's not true. I mean, the people in my ward are going to get their tax bill and it's going to go up 13%. And I don't care if your house is 79,000 or 220,000, you're getting socked with 13% more. I think one of the things we have to look again, let's go to Springfield. Let's do a LaSalle Street tax. Let's tax people. Let's tax the corporate millionaires.
You
let's
say, have a, find revenue sources that are at a different
why
pay class.
Why is the guy making $560,000 a year or $600,000 a year or $2 million a year paying less taxes than you and I? That's unfathomable to me. Let's have a graduated income tax that the people that make more pay more. I mean, not the guy that lives, not the family that lives in the bush that's living at $32,000 a year and you're taxing the hell out of them. They can't even, they're freaking out because they don't even know how they're going to pay their garbage tax.
There seems to be in this, and we're getting there when it comes to city government and understanding where we live and how we live and how we pay for what we what we use. That, you know, the T word, the capital T word, tax, mm-hmm. where, you know, Democrats will always be accused of, well, why don't you just tax some more, tax some more. But in this case, and I've heard this from, we had Representative Ghisardi on, that talking about changing the way that almost a progressive income tax, this idea you're talking about
yeah.
where you pay what, you know, based on what you make.
Absolutely.
And why do you think there's a pushback on that? Why do you think that not just the powerful and the rich and the people who don't want to pay more money, but also just people in general who are like, I don't want to talk about taxes?
You know, here's the thing. Taxes are a way of life. But I think in the city of Chicago, we're taxing people right out of here. I mean, and for me, it's hard because I am the only ward that borders another state. I can walk to Indiana, 6 blocks, and I'm in Indiana. You pay zero taxes on food. Zero. So you're going to pay 9% and in my ward, or you're going to walk over 6 blocks over and pay 0%.
Are you seeing people make that move?
100%. Grocery stores have left. Restaurants have left. Places have left just to go 6 blocks over, and the same guy that was over here is now right across the way because they're paying less tax. So for me, it's really hard. I think the people that don't want to talk about this are the ones that are, you know, the millionaires. They don't want to pay it because I've never heard like working class people say, oh, don't have a graduated income tax, at least not in the 10th ward I haven't.
Right.
You know, they're looking at people like, hey, why are we getting socked with all this stuff when the guy downtown is getting a tax break? You know, not fair, not fair at all.
For your job in the 10th ward, which it's a fascinating job to be alderman because you have to be of mind to tackle the big issues that we're facing, whether it be budget deficits or mm-hmm. funding our schools citywide or making big decisions on behalf of the whole city of Chicago. But you also, as an alderman, are in charge of the streets. You're in charge of you know, everything that's happening inside the boundaries of your neighborhood, the 10th ward.
The trees.
Right, the trees, the potholes, everything
the
involved.
The curbs, the gutters.
As that part of the job, how have you adapted to that part of the job, the local part of being able to be a spokesperson, but also responsible for the people in 10th ward?
So, you know, that part for me is really easy because I've worked in my ward. I was a counselor at Jane Addams Elementary I was worked there for 21 years. And from that job, I listened to people's concerns and I hooked them up with resources to get that problem solved. So looking at those aspects of my job in the ward, it came really easy because that's something that I did for 21 years. I have 6 staff in my ward that work for me. I tell them ABC, always be compassionate, because if somebody comes into that door, I don't care if it's because there's a squirrel living on my porch or I have a pothole the size of a moon crater right in front of my house. It's an important issue to them, you know? And the misconception, politics are local, man. They are local, and the people just want things done in their ward. If their streets are fixed, their streetlights are on, their garbage picked up, and they have a safe place to live, they're happy. I don't think, you know, a lot of people from my ward look at it, we're sequestered in this little island. If all the bridges go up, we can't get out. You know, seriously,
right.
That's the truth.
Right.
And more people are concerned on what's happening locally than down here. They're still concerned. I get feedback and slack on some things, but flack, I'm sorry, but I think politics are local for sure.
For you, I mean, you've got the local part down.
Yep.
I mean, you had 21 years in your community as mm-hmm. a counselor in the school. You lived in the same community for
56
decades,
years.
Or 56 years. You know, Sadlowski name is a big name when it comes mm-hmm. to labor unions and and the area and the steel mills there. So you got local down. What have you learned about being a city alderman over the first 2 years here?
16 months and okay. 16 months, 2 hours and 15 minutes. No. Running for office and sitting in the seat are two different entities. That's for sure. One of the things I've learned is that because I come from the side of trade unionism and fighting for social justice, keeping my mouth shut is the hardest thing for me, because I'm used to putting people in their place, and I'm used to telling people, no, this isn't the way, and fighting for what's right. And I've had to scale that back a lot. 16 months ago, I sat back and I listened for a long time to kind of learn the game, you know. And this is not a game of checkers. It's a game of chess.
Really?
Yeah, absolutely. You got to think ahead on what people are going to do.
And, I mean, is that something that – I mean, when I hear you say that, too, as a constituent of the city of Chicago, I'm not in your ward, but I want my alderman to speak out. I want my alderman to be right on the issues. So how do you balance that, the idea of being able to, as you said, keep your mouth shut and be a spokesperson for, in your case, a progressive political movement that people are speaking up on?
Keeping my mouth shut, I think, is probably – I shouldn't have said that. I need to learn to speak when the moment's right, and I'm not afraid to speak up now. I was never afraid. I think I was a little bit intimidated. I'm not gonna, because I've never been an alderman. It's a new job after 21 years I'm sitting, but I'm not intimidated anymore. I've learned that everybody that sits in that city council is just like me. They're made of flesh and blood, and they're just like me. People in the city of Chicago look at aldermen like, they're way, but we're not. We're just normal, everyday people. I mean, for me anyway, I just want to make the 10th ward better. I never want to be mayor, never want to be a senator, congress. I just want to make the 10th ward better. I will always speak out on what I feel is right and just. I will never keep my mouth shut on that. And I think I would like to believe that by opening my mouth and saying things that I've said in there, I'm starting to steer the conversations in different directions, because a lot of things I bring up, people never knew, you know.
What's your relationship like with the mayor, Mayor Emanuel?
It's fine. It's fine. Cordial. I've seen a different side of him than I saw when I was in CPS. He's the mayor and I'm an alderman. You know, we say hello, we shake hands, and he's been to my ward a couple times, you know, so.
Okay, that's good. That's a good answer. what's your relationship with you are part of the, like I said, the progressive political movement mm-hmm. for Democrats mm-hmm. in council, and it's getting bigger. I mean, you're seeing strides in that regard, that there seems to be at least different voices in the Democratic Party in the city of Chicago. What's your relationship like with the council? Being one of those new members who are coming in and being part of this progressive movement, what's your relationship like with the members who aren't in that?
I get along with everyone. There's a lot of people that are on different sides of the fence than me, and I think just learning even throughout life, that's going to happen, right? I am not going to try to sway or push somebody to think what I do, to think how I think, because that's just going to frustrate the heck out of me. Mm-hmm. You know, they are who they are, and their allegiance is to somebody different than me. I get along with everybody. Everyone has been very, they've been great. They have been really great to me in there. A lot of people have given me great tips on what to do, how to handle things. Everybody's been very accommodating and open and welcoming. So I have no complaints there at all.
Alderman, we're going to wrap up here pretty soon, mm-hmm. but we didn't get a chance to talk about some of the bigger ticket items here in Chicago, the police. Mm-hmm. Obviously what's happened with the police force in the last 9 months. Today, the FOP head, Dean Angelo, talking about people need to really think about sort of rallying around the police department because morale's low and feel like the public doesn't have their back. We didn't talk about violence, which is one of the biggest issues, and that affects the 10th Ward as well.
Big time.
So we need to talk about that. The other issue, you know, and I want to get your take on this, because the last time I had you on the program was one of the election nights where you were serving as a delegate or a spokesperson for Bernie Sanders.
Yep.
You were campaigning for him. I remember you campaigned in Iowa. Yep. You campaigned here. Now that that has winded down, have you yet to make a determination of who you want to be president? Are you going to step in line with Hillary Clinton?
Step in line with Hillary Clinton.
Are you going to support Hillary Clinton?
I will do everything I can to make sure Donald Trump doesn't become president. The Democratic Convention, as you know, is coming up soon. I'm very proud of the movement that Bernie created. I really am. And what he's done is literally push Hillary. It's a wake-up call for her. It's a wake-up call for the Democratic Party to say, holy moly, we better wake up, because there's millions of people, and not just for Donald Trump, but for, you know, people all over this country are waking up, even if they're for the other guy, which I don't even want to say his name. Mm-hmm. It begins with a T.
The name you just said five times.
But yeah. Okay. Anyway, I will vote for Hillary Clinton.
Okay.
If Bernie doesn't get the nomination.
Okay.
I will.
Wow, I like
Absolutely.
That.
I will. Yeah. You have to.
Susan Sidlowski Garza, the 10th Ward Alderman here in the city of Chicago, my guest tonight at the big table. Alderman, thanks so much for coming in.
Hey, thanks so much. Thanks. I really appreciate it.
I can't wait to talk again.
Yeah, you too.